Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. In today's global business environment, it's more and more difficult to gain a competitive edge, but it's not impossible. Talent, potentially the most powerful source of competitive advantage, is available. But how should organizations be designed to make talent their key source of a competitive advantage? In this follow-up to his best-selling book, Built to Change, Ed Lawler shows how organizations can combine the right organization design, management practices, and talent to gain a critical performance edge. Welcome to Edgewise, Ed.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here.
Ed, why does talent matter?
There's two ways to think about why talent matters. Every organization needs at least acceptable level of talent to even function. But my book is not really about that. It's about how you could think of and design an organization where talent does provide you with a competitive advantage. And that takes more than just having the right talent. It takes the right way of organizing, managing, and dealing with the talent you have. An earlier book I wrote called Treat People Right makes the point that certainly if you want a good supply of talent, you want people to stay around, you want to avoid the costs associated with turnover, you do have to treat people right. But this book sets a little higher standard. It says, what do you need to do if you want the way you manage people and the way they perform to be the difference maker? Not the physical assets you have, not your ability to capitalize things, not your contracts with the government or legislation that favors you, but actually the way people operate and deliver your services and products.
In your book, you provide a blueprint for organizing and leading a human capital organization. What is a human capital organization, and how does that relate to your definition of talent?
The term I use is human capital centric to reinforce the view that it's people that make the difference. It's your ability to attract, retain, develop, and organize people that give you a competitive advantage in the marketplace. That's what I mean by talent, if you will, focusing on what your people can do and how that fits your business strategy and how that leads to a competitive advantage. And I make the differentiation in the book between situations where that's possible and situations where it's perhaps not the best way to go. I'm not arguing that everybody should look to human capital as a source of competitive advantage. Yes, everybody has to look to it, certainly, because you need people, but they may not be the difference maker, or maybe just a few of them make the difference.
Exactly. In our culture, particularly in North America, this culture of all-stars and superstars,
They
seem to cast a long shadow. It seems that in many cases, these superstar personalities and these superstar relationships create sort of unforeseen ripple effects across an organization where they can't standardize on a certain way of doing things. Do you see this?
I do see that. That may be dysfunctional, but I'm not sure it always is, because there are certain businesses where a few stars do make the difference in terms of how effective that organization is. I was reading a quote yesterday from a CEO, let's assume he's right, heads an organization of 80,000 employees. He said, 200 people here make the difference in my business. That's not an organization that I would call human capital centric and argue should be managed in a way that really focuses on human capital as providing a distinctive difference. What he needs to do, of course, if that's true, is focus on succession planning, development for a small core of people in the business, and just be sure the rest of the positions in the organization are filled adequately. I would contrast that with an organization I was working with the other day where the CEO says, people are our product. And what he meant by that is it's a consulting firm, professional service firm, 40,000 employees. Really, the people are the product. And he says, our talent is number one for us. That's the number one thing I focus on. We're organized to get the best talent. We're organized to utilize that talent effectively. That's the key to our success, because that's the thing that differentiates us from the other people in the same business.
I've also seen that experts in the field have indicated that if you could find a way to ratchet up the performance of the people below the superstar level, even a percentage point or two, that in many cases would mean more to the company than adding another superstar.
Absolutely, if it's that kind of business. Let me just go back to that kind of business for a moment, because I've referred to it a little bit vaguely. By that kind of business, I mean a business where people really do control the production and service, and where differentiating service, exceptional service, will get you customers, will get you more revenue, will get loyalty, will produce a superior product. That happens pretty obviously in some retail establishments. Whole Foods has gone that way. Starbucks has tried to organize themselves successfully to a substantial degree. In other cases, Walmart, et cetera, has decided not to go that way. That's not their basis of competitive advantage. You don't go to Walmart's for a superior experience when dealing with the people in the store. So what they need is people to fill the job that are okay. They can add, subtract, run a cash register, or whatever, but that's it.
Ed, you point to a STAR model as the means to create such an organization. What is the STAR model?
The STAR model is a way of representing the key elements of an organization that indicates those elements have to come together to support the kind of performance you want the organization to demonstrate. The points on the STAR are reward systems, the work processes and work design, the business strategy, the information systems in the organization, and of course, the talent. What the STAR model emphasizes is that those have to fit together to support your business strategy or your difference maker in terms of winning.
I'm trying to read between the lines on some of your answers here. So a human capital-centric solution organization may not be the right answer for everybody.
Absolutely. I started alluding to that earlier when we were talking about Walmart, and I can certainly name other companies where the way the product is or the way the service is designed, people really can't make that much of a difference, or creating a situation where they will make a big difference just isn't worth the effort. I'm thinking, just take an extreme example, there's a for-profit toll road in Southern California that I go on infrequently, but I do go on it. And I'm always impressed when I get to the toll booth with the toll takers who will be always, good afternoon, thank you for using our road, here's your change, and so forth and so on. Now, that's nice. And they've always spent a lot of time training and making their human capital more sensitive to people and so forth and so on. But it really doesn't influence my, or I suspect anybody else's, desire or lack of desire to use that toll road. I'm just as likely to use that toll road as I am to use a New York City toll booth where I've never been greeted with anything other than a,
I can tell you,
I found, one.
There's one bridge. They are consistently more polite. More They're fine. Friendlier. They say, have a good day. It's the Henry Hudson Bridge. Northern tip of Manhattan. They are consistently
Does
the friendliest
Does that give them a
people.
Competitive advantage in the toll bridge market?
I don't think so.
That's an extreme example. One of the examples I use in the book is Costco versus Sam's Club, which are essentially in the same business. And Costco has decided to make people their source of competitive advantage. They pay better wages. They train people more. They integrate them more into the business. They give them more flexibility in terms of how they deal with customers, whereas Sam's Club is typical Walmart. And it has paid off for Costco. They do produce superior financial performance. But that's not always true. It depends on the nature of the business.
So how can leaders and managers determine which talent-focused management approach best fits their business?
In the book, I mentioned two, the high involvement approach, which is one I've worked on for years and installed in a number of companies. And then the other one is the global competitor approach. Global competitor approach has really emerged in the last 10 years or so as the management approach of choice for high technology firms and global firms, hence the name global competitor. It creates a different kind of work relationship between employees and the organization than the high involvement approach. High involvement approach essentially says we're married, we expect to stay together, you're going to be involved in the business, you're going to get a piece of the action, profit sharing, stock ownership.
A lot of love.
A lot of long-term relationships. Of course, it does depend on you're willing to learn. You got to keep learning, you got to stay involved, you got to perform. But if you do that, we'll work with you. That, I think, still makes sense for a lot of businesses, particularly ones that want a long-term relationship with customers. Maybe the technology base isn't changing super fast, but some companies, an increasing number of the technology firms, particularly ones that are trying to operate globally, have found that that model isn't quite responsive enough to the rapid changes in technology and marketplace. So they've created what I call in the book the global competitor model, which essentially says we're in a serial monogamy relationship. As long as we need your skills and as long as you perform well, we have a relationship. But as soon as either one of those ends, we end. Goodbye. And on the other side, the employee is saying to them, as long as you treat me well, I'm here, but don't expect me to stay any longer than time where I'm either learning something or getting really well rewarded. So we both know it's a little bit of a transitory relationship that may last, but it may not.
Some jaded people might call that being mercenary.
Well, you could call it being mercenary. I tend to think of it as being more pragmatic, that the organization needs to change its competency base, it needs to change its technological base, it may need to change its geography. And if it can't do that quickly and rapidly, some startup will be in there and take the business away from them. So it's almost a survival strategy in today's very rapidly changing business environment. One company, for example, in the technology area that doesn't adopt that, which is an interesting one, is SAS, the software firm down in North Carolina, which gets a lot of publicity. They don't do that in part because they want a long-term relationship with their customers, and their customers who buy their software look for upgrades and so forth. So they see the value of having a constant employee base that's maintaining their software, maintaining their customer relationships. Interestingly enough, one of the firms that have gone to the more global competitor organization over the last decade, and I think successfully, is IBM. If you look at IBM historically, it was
job for life.
Job for life, great job, don't worry about anything, we'll move you, we'll tell you what to learn, we'll train you, et cetera, et cetera. They've gone all the way over in the last 10 years to what I would call a pretty pure global competitor, where they're saying, we don't know what you need to learn. We'll give you some money and you pay for part of it. We'll pay for part of it. But you got to keep your skills up to date. You got to make decisions about what you're going to learn. There's no guaranteed employment here. It's as long as we need you, you're here.
Given this concept of the human capital-centric organization, how does that change the role of a corporate HR department?
Well, it should radically change the role of a corporate HR department. I think that all too often it doesn't change it. The HR still does what it's always done, which is basic administration and a little bit of problem solving around human capital issues. But in theory, HR should be front and center. It should be at every board meeting. It should see that the board has a couple board members who understand human capital. It should develop a lot of metrics about the human capital of the organization, its condition, its skills, its readiness, its value to the organization. It should have a clear employment brand that it establishes. It should have a selection process that looks very carefully at people's willingness to learn and develop and continue. So I think it calls for a substantially upgraded department. I would argue that really it should be the most important of the staff groups in the organization, which it rarely is. Usually it's the lowest paid and treated without even a direct reporting relationship to the CEO. Obviously, it should report to the CEO if it's the most important department. It should have the best salaries. Everybody who aspires to senior management position should rotate through HR so they understand what it means to really manage human capital and what the issues are there. Quite a different role than has traditionally been true.
What kind of questions should corporate leadership be asking themselves when considering the effort and the cost, all costs associated with moving towards a human capital-centric model? It sounds like a top-down thing. The leadership has to value this type of approach.
Yeah, I think that's right. One of the questions I get asked a lot is, well, I'm in middle management or lower management. What can I do to make this happen? And I think, unfortunately, the answer in many cases is not a whole lot unless you've got an organization at the top that's committed to this, because otherwise you look like a rebel and a troublemaker, perhaps, and a contrarian if you're saying things like, not just people are our most important asset, which everybody says, but we ought to give people more freedom to do this, or we ought to invest in this kind of training, et cetera. So the key is, yes, leadership at the top. I don't think it's surprising that many of the companies that I cite that are successful, whether it's W.L. Gore in the technology world or Whole Foods in the customer service world, are founder managed or were founder managed. The founder wanted to run them this way. So he or she put that kind of spirit into the organization.
It was built into it.
I mentioned, of course, IBM earlier as one where a transition took place. It took 8 to 10 years. And
it was pretty devastating.
Gerstner, really, I think, an exceptional leader in changing the organization. Of course, that's the extreme case because they were so embedded in their traditional model and it's such a big organization. It is a difficult change, but in a lot of businesses, and this is the key, it may be the only thing organizations can do in the future that will keep them alive and give them a competitive advantage. And if they don't do it, they're very prone to being blindsided by a startup that comes from nowhere with the right management approach that wins the marketplace because they give better products and better services. One concept I use in the book, which I haven't referred to so far, is the idea of value added. So the question really is, can the employees throughout the organization, not just a few, but the majority of the employees, add significant value above and beyond what your normal systems and processes would produce? That's why I used the toll example earlier. There's not much value that a good toll taker can add compared to an average toll taker. But many kinds of work, the employee can add more value. They can do better problem solving. They can relate to the customer more effectively. And if that brings in more business or positions the company better, then it's probably worth taking a more human capital centric model in mind when you organize.
I think that's a great place to sort of wrap this up. The title of the book is Talent, Making People Your Competitive Advantage. And the author of the book is with us today, Edward Lawler. Ed, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Now it's time for You've Been Spotted, where we interview people at one of our centers. For more information on our centers and our seminars, please visit our website at amanet.org. And now here's Kevin Lee.
Today I'm visiting AMA's seminar on strategic planning.
I'm Director of Communications for a shopping center developer. With my position and the current environment, I thought it would be a good course to take. The course has been terrific. I've really gotten a lot out of it. And probably the thing that stands out for me the most is that there's not just one way to do it. I really did go in thinking there's just one way to create the plan. And I got a lot of new ideas. The instructor stressed the importance of communication and of talking to your customers. I'm used to talking to our external customers, but not as much our internal.
My chief responsibility is professional development and organizational development, and I work principally with nonprofits and faith-based organizations. I wanted to see if there were new ways of thinking, how another industry thinks, to hear about some of the challenges that are similar, and using things like SOAR and appreciative inquiry as a positive way to affect change by motivating people to see things as possibilities as opposed to problems, weaknesses, and so forth, and reducing the psychological burden of competition. So I think that was very effective.
I'm a VP operation in the biotech industry. Our industry is getting more and more challenging. Our industry is highly regulated by FDA. Class, I think, give us a lot of how-to things. Also, we do group exercise. We got a couple more people from medical device, but also from education, banking, even from waste management companies. So, yeah, we got a perspective is where they're coming from.
I'm senior manager of marketing strategy. I have a marketing background, but I really like strategy, and I feel that this is where my strengths lie. They're asking me to do all the strategic planning, and although I know all the frameworks, I came to class to kind of put it together and have a detailed and clear picture, step-by-step process. Other part that I really loved about the class is the notion that, okay, you can learn from me as much as you can learn from each other, which is true. We all in strategic planning already. We already have our opinions and a lot of knowledge. So group work is very important because we get to learn a lot more, not just lecturing, but a lot more from each other in real life. The challenge is that I'm not a CEO, COO to make all these changes, but small changes that I could do without going to the CEO and would still impact the organization really came to me.
I've called back to the office a number of different times to tell them that I want to go back and share with them some of the things that I learned. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and actually start with my team and lay out a strategic plan with my smaller team rather than the company and other departments that I normally work with. Really start from within, start small, and then work out.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.